representatives of white-collar associations that began to form in the first decade of the 20th century argued that, in fact, the white-collar population was a part of the middle class. It didn't own the means of production, certainly, but that it was part of the middle class nonetheless, a white-collar middle class, having more in common with the older civil service, honored positions in European society, than with the blue-collar working class that people saw all around them in the last half of the 19th century. Marxist theorists, on the other hand, looking at this emerging tertiary sector, made the opposite conclusion. That is, that the white-collar employees were, in fact, elements of the proletariat. It may be, they argued, that they are not manual laborers. It may be that they would distinguish themselves in the mode of work they do from their blue-collar comrades. But in point of fact, they do not own the means of production, and so they are part of the proletariat. This debate would go on all through the latter part of the 1890s and, as I said, through the opening decades of the 20th century. The white-collar sector, regardless of whether one saw it as part of the proletariat or an emerging new middle class, a lower middle class, was a major entry point for women into the economy. It would be in the white-collar sector of the economy that women would make their dramatic entry. Women had, in the 1880s and indeed up until that point, been found largely in two areas of the economy, either as helpers on the family farm or helpers in a family business, in agriculture or in some sort of domestic work. But in addition to the startling discovery of this large and growing white-collar component of the middle class, one of the striking things about it was that a very substantial portion were in fact women. Young women, indeed, in many cases, virtually girls, who were flowing into these white-collar positions, low-paying white-collar positions, I might add. A second discovery about this white-collar group that was emerging was that a great many people in this white-collar group came from working-class backgrounds, that they and that for them, as for young women, that they saw this entry into clerical positions, they saw their entry into the white-collar world, away from manual labor, as a distinct step up the social ladder. That the white-collar employees of this tertiary sector really represented an upwardly mobile element in society. For a great many sociologists, not to mention political figures, they argued that what this really represented was indeed the flexibility of late industrial capitalism to adapt, to provide for upward mobility, and that rather than the increasing immiseration of the proletariat that Marx had foreseen, one had a far more complicated social structure by the turn of the century. This is precisely what Weber was looking at when he argued made his arguments about bureaucratization being the basis for alienation rather than the ownership of the means of production. In many cases, these white-collar employees were both of working-class background and female, and this would continue to be the case on into the 20th century. Indeed, all of the censuses from the 1890s down to the outbreak of the Second World War would show this element of the middle class steadily growing and organizing. White-collar employees would begin their own labor associations. They didn't want to call them labor unions. This by itself was a suggestion, a tip-off, I think, of their social orientation and their politics. They didn't want to be seen as part of the blue-collar working class with labor unions, but rather white-collar associations that would distinguish them from blue-collar labor. And in fact, this is one of the key also in aspects of middle-class identity in the 19th century, was on the one hand